Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more. Welcome back to another episode of Cutting the Distance. Today's guest is Ryan Lampers, the Stealthy Hunter. Him and his wife, Hillary, run Hunt Harvest Health. One of the guys I look up to. Growing up, you know, a lot of guys, who do you look up to? I don't look up to... This guy, you know, came from my home state of Washington. I have to tell a little funny story about Ryan before we get going. Back in 2013, I started seeing pictures of this long-haired guy that was killing, at that time, I thought, animals consistently that shouldn't be killed in Washington. And shame on me, but like instantly, like, that guy's a poacher. and then another picture would pop up the next fall or a couple. I'm like, this guy's doing something wrong. Rather than my ego letting me feel that like a guy could be this good or this successful or put in this much work, fast forward 10 years, getting to know you, knowing maybe even how much more you put into this than everybody else. Ryan Lampers, everybody, welcome to the show.
Oh, appreciate it, Jason. Thanks for having me on here, man. Yeah, we both come from Washington. We both love hunting elk, I guess, even though I love to tease you about the greatest animal in the world to hunt, which is not elk, right? Mule deer?
Oh, man.
Come on now.
Yeah.
We both know it's true.
No, it's, you know, and that's one thing about Ryan. He's got a, you know, he's had great success on elk, great success on mule deer, great success on bear, really anything. And you're so humble, you'll never say this, but I can say it. Anything you've set out to accomplish, you know, hunting wise or pursuit wise, you've always seemed to find success. And that's really why I brought you on today. I want to talk about, number one, your mindset going into a hunt. Mm-hmm. Number two, your expectations of the hunt. And number three, how you make adjustments through the hunt, throughout the hunt, to make sure that your goal that you went into that is accomplished, I guess. Right. And I think it's fairly methodical, fairly prescriptive, but you've got a way. I've got to hunt with you a couple times, albeit maybe some of the worst elk hunts I've been on in the recent past have been with you, but I've got to hunt with you, kind of see how you think. You know, there's a lot of times where, you know, for instance, there's a bull bugling. I wanted to maybe cheat the wind, and Ryan's like, no, we got to drop down the canyon a mile, go around this ridge, and then come back. And it's just stuff like that, like little separators where I may be willing to risk it. And so that kind of factors in, but we're going to kind of jump in. We do have one user question or from the fans. And if you have a question of your own, you can either get a hold of us on social media. You can email us at ctd@phelpsgamecalls.com. Send us your questions for our guests or any questions you may want the guests to have. But the question we have for you today, Ryan, is how do you prepare physically for a hunt? Mm-hmm. And then does it depend on the hunt, or is it more of a mindset that I'm going to be in this level of shape because fall's always coming again?
Yeah, that's a good question. And a quick answer is it's always the same. You know, every hunt, whether it's a spring bear hunt to mule deer in the late season to maybe some archery stuff in September, some elk hunts, it's always the same. You just kind of have to, I like to be at my best and never have a wall that I can't go past. Never have a basin too deep or a hill too steep is basically how it goes. And so, fortunately these days, you know, I get a hunt throughout the year. It's not just that 8 weeks in the fall season. I've somehow managed to carve out these other opportunity hunts for, say going down to Arizona in January for coos deer or mule deer, spring bear, you know, that takes up, there's 6 weeks there of good hunting for spring bear and getting out in the mountains. So I think it's always the same short answer, always trying to be at your best physically. And you know, the hunting season never really stops, I guess, if you don't want it to. Yeah.
So you don't like to challenge yourself like me every year where you got to get back in shape. You just like to keep it.
I don't want to have to try to regain, everything lost every time. You know, a part of that is, I am married to my wife, Doc Hill, Hillary. She keeps me in shape, man. She keeps me in check. If I was to start slacking off, she'd be the first to tell me, which I respect. I love that. And I've got two daughters who, you know, I'm 48 years old now, and I got to stay in shape for them. My one daughter, she's 13. You know, we kind of started a little bit later than most people with kids. We were late 30s when we had our first daughter. And she's just coming into her own when it comes to these hunts. So I got to stay in shape. I don't want to let it go because I know how hard it is to come back from. I want to be able to take her on some very good, hard hunts where she has adversity as well. I'm able to keep up with her. She's an animal. She can hike. She's got long legs like me, and she's got a motor. So, I just can't let it go. I can't let my daughter beat me up the hill.
Gotcha. Well, there's your tips for, staying in shape physical. Now, is there a regimen? Is it just in shape through hunting? Do you, if you don't have a hunt coming for a month, are you going to go hit a trail? Are you going to hit the gym? Are you going to just watch what you eat and kind of maintain? Mm-hmm. Like what does that, give us a 2-minute answer on kind of what that system looks like?
Yeah. So, I'm not a gym rat by any stretch. We do have a downstairs basement that has a lot of gym stuff in it. You know, we've got the kettlebells, we've got, a rowing machine, which I love doing the rowing machine in the wintertime when those hikes are really cold. Living in Montana, we got those minus temps, and hikes are a little rough in those conditions. We still do them, but it is nice to have that. So I would say the one thing that I do more than anything else is hike with weight. I think that translates the best to what we do, what you and I do.
Yeah, for sure.
Hiking in, you're always having 45, 50 pounds on your back, and then obviously hiking out heavy. It's the one thing that you can do, I feel like, doesn't break your body down, number one. Can be shortened, short and quick. We've got loops around our house that we can just throw weight on and hike around with the girls. And we've got some short trips just down the road that we can hit a trailhead. And even if it's just a half-mile hike with weight for speed, that really helps out. But very little gym time. We do some mountain tough workouts for sure. Some guys out of Bozeman put those on. They're great. My wife does those. But overall, I'd say just hiking with weight helps me the most. And that's what keeps me in shape pretty much year round.
Perfect. Perfect. Once again, if you have any questions of your own, contact us at ctd@phelpsgamecalls.com or hit us up on social and we'll throw your question in here. Now we're going to jump in to kind of what I wanted to talk about a little bit, and it's more of that mental preparedness, the mindset going into the hunt. You've prepared, you're physically prepared, you've got your hunt plan, you're ready to go. Now, we kind of always used to joke about, a tag with that you had in a certain unit, like it wasn't good to be a mature animal in that unit at that time, because you're going in with the mindset that you don't care what adversities in your way, what roadblocks, what hurdles, you're going to do what it takes to go accomplish, mm-hmm. mature boar during spring bear season, a mature bull during, the rut, whatever it may be, you've set that up. And so what is that mindset? Like, how do you get to that place? Can we get into the head of Ryan Lampers as he's approaching a hunt? Like, mm-hmm. what are you thinking? What are your goals? And kind of what are you going to do to accomplish those?
Yeah. So, consistent success is always the goal. And that used to be, in my teens and my 20s, it was just that. It was making sure tags didn't go unfilled. And then I think just as we evolve, we try to get, a little bit creative and add some challenge for maturity in animals. When I was in my 20s, I wasn't trying to get the biggest bull on the mountain. And, I just wanted to get some mature bull. These days, having time on your side, having 10 days to carve out to go do a hunt, you can be a little picky. So, we have the ability to spend more days in the mountain, but, overall mindset is whatever it takes. Whether that is that could mean physically, that could mean playing the patience game. Sometimes patience is your best friend up there when it comes to success. I remember in my early years, I used to zip up to a clearing and glass it real fast. Oh, no animals here. I'm going to go 2 miles that way and look at that clearing and then race over there. And there's no animals here. I used to go way too fast. I just figured I was going to outwork everybody else and that was going to fill tags. And it did. It worked. But nowadays, I find myself putting myself in these great positions to glass big country and spend the time. So consistent success for me has been finding more patience.
Yep.
And then also being physically fit enough to do whatever it takes, go however far
however
it takes.
How many ridges more versus however many feet higher.
And it's the old cliche thing that everybody says, trying to separate yourself from others, that's always going to be the yep. game and the struggle, but it's possible. So we get creative with how we separate, whether that's miles, whether that's river crossings, whether that's avoiding trailheads, those type things. Seem simple, but they really can separate you from other
folks. Yeah, I mean, when you guys were on the Idaho backcountry hunt, mm-hmm. I've seen and heard about some of the sketchy river crossings our good buddy Jeff. And, yep. It's like, I don't think he crossed with you and Joe, right? He's like, nope, you guys. And it's just stuff like that where it's like, all right, maybe you're risking, maybe you don't see it as a risk, but Jeff's like, I might have died there. And then I just wasn't going across. But one thing I do want to point out is you talked about not having to outwork everybody. You want to go in, with as many tools in your toolbox. I believe it was it 19 you killed the big buck in Colorado?
I believe archery, so. I believe so. It was 19.
Where you sat for 4 days, right? And literally didn't, burn a calorie. I say burn a calorie, but you didn't burn an extra calorie. You literally just glassed a buck for 4 days until he gave you the right trip. Versus this year on a spring bear hunt, somebody showed up into your spot on the first day and you decided to hike 17 more miles. So you've got the ability to sit and glass if needed versus you've got the ability to hike 17 miles to get away from people if needed. And it's everything in between. And it's the compromise, it's the decisions made.
Yeah, I think it's going by braille, being able to adjust on the fly because you're never going to have a hunt go perfectly as planned. It's very rare that happens. But being able to adapt, and these days, let's face it, there's a lot of guys out there. So, there may be somebody, if you pre-scouted this one area and you show up and there's three guys camped there in a teepee, you better have backup plans. So a lot of, I think our success has been from preparation, mapping out areas where we don't just have one place we're going to head to. If that place is a failure for whatever reason, we have a lot more areas, A, B, C, D, E. There's just a bunch of other areas that we've put a lot of time into in our scouting, e-scouting. It gets talked about a ton, but it is very valuable in making that hunt plan. So we don't sit there scratching our heads when we show up to an area and say there's some studs that work their way into that spot. We will leave it to them and go hit something. We'll go hit plan B.
Yep.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah. But just being able to adjust on the fly, I think it's huge. You know, a lot of people get really down when one plan doesn't work, and they get in their head and they think, well, this hunt's over, there's too many people, or the elk aren't talking here. And it's just being able to stay positive. One of the guys that I really like paying attention to is Brian Barney. I think we all know who that is. And one of the reasons Barney is so successful is his mental look. Like his mental
outlook
on everything is positive. Misses a shot, time to go get another one. Like, don't let it get you so down that you pull yourself out of the hunt and you quit trying. You know, that's a big part of it. So, you know, trying to always remind myself to stay positive when something works out has been a big help.
Yeah. It's huge. And, for a lot of people that haven't been there, and I'm a firm believer that a lot of experience will build some of this mental toughness. You've been there, you've been in the lows of lows, you've struggled for days, but then ultimately, you know, you push on and find success later in the hunt. And so I think if you've been there and lived it, it's easier for us to say, like, you know, be positive. But if you're a new hunter, maybe haven't struggled and haven't found success after the struggle, I think that wears on a hunter. And it's crazy how the human brain works. They will do everything to tell you why you should go back to the truck. And then when you're in the truck, your brain will convince you why you should, you know, drive down the mountain. And then when you get to town, your brain says, well, you should probably just finish driving home. You know, it's trying to overcome.
Easy to find excuses.
Yeah. I mean, the physical weighs in on that for sure. Like if your physical starts to break down, then it's once again, your mental just kind of, you know, and so there's that, you know, from a lot of experience, which.
Yeah. And I think there's a ton of guys who are fit. I mean, there's CrossFit guys that are just elite athletes. But that doesn't necessarily always translate to the mental side. People can be that elite type athlete, but still not have the fortitude to keep pushing. Like when things get tough, a lot of guys do bail out and have days left. You know, they've scheduled out 7 days and they pull out on day four. Man, that would drive me crazy. I couldn't live with myself doing that. So the mental side of it is huge. I think you'll find that those elite one percenters out there, you know, the Brian Barney type guys, the guys that are very successful year after year after year, I pay attention to those guys. And generally it's the never quit. It's very positive. And it's the guys that prep year round. I mean, shooting a lot, physically challenging themselves in the off season. And I think the physical challenges, that I like to do, we talked about the backpack hiking with weight, struggling through those, and then add some really good challenges, add in some of those 20, 30 milers and try to knock those out in a day.
Yep.
Those just tell you when things get down that you can do it, you can push through it. So we used to do these death hikes, you know.
Yep.
Those things were hard, you know, they were very hard, but you have to get them done. And those are things that you can look back on when you're actually hunting and say, well, I got through that.
Yeah,
like, I just hiked 100 miles in 3 days. I can do this.
Yeah, if you're at 60% of that, you know, or you're I'm not even, you know, half as tired as I was at that point, or, you know, it didn't go, which is easy to.
Yeah.
So do you feel that the elite, you know, the 1% you were just talking about, can that be learned, trained into, or do you think a little bit of that comes from like just what you were born with? Like, you teach yourself to be that, you know, both mental and physical, you know, get to that mental and physical level?
No, I think you can work yourself up to be as mentally tough as you want to be. But it's going to suck, right? I think there's some people that are born with it. Some guys are just tougher than others, let's face it. But if you want to be that guy, I see no reason why you can't be if you really want it bad enough. I think it's one of those things that you have to build up to. Do hard things. That's it. That's the cliche, right? Do hard things. And in the end, you're going to be able to basically accomplish a lot and not get pulled out of the mountains. And that's the goal, is to keep pushing. And that's been a big help for us.
Yeah,
for
sure. And that, you know, I'm not near the physical shape you guys are, but that's one thing where my mental toughness never looks at like physical endurance or like physical struggle as like a reason to give up. Like I've just put a roadblock up. Like, you just, 'cause you're tired, like, yeah, you can wait, but you're going to stay in the mountains and stay in the game, stay hunting.
Absolutely.
And then one thing I want to point out that you said on our New Mexico elk hunt, we had a lot of time during the,
we
had 20 minutes of bugling in the morning and 20 minutes at night. And so we had the rest of the day to talk. Is don't ever let yourself slow down. Mm-hmm. Like if you're doing trail A and you did it in an hour on the first day, you better at least do it in 59 minutes and 59 seconds the next day. And at that point, you're never going backwards, right? You're only ever improving. So yeah, I started to implement some of that. Is it's tough. There's days where I'm like, man, I don't know if I can keep up with, you know, level 7 for 10 minutes, level 8 for 10, and then go back to 7. And then, you know, the next day, like click another 8 over. But, you know, on the stair to climber, if you just always make that concentrated effort to at least, you know, keep
you got a time in your head. Don't ever let yourself go under that time. Yep. You know, don't ever let yourself slack. It's easy to do. Cause like I mentioned with the hikes that we do, sometimes they're with weight, sometimes they're without. But we always time it and we always make sure that we beat it. It might be just by a few seconds, but it just makes you push yourself. It really does. Yeah. And it's your mind is, it's crazy how it works. And if you have that going into every little training session that you do, whether that's, you can compete with yourself or you can have a buddy that does the same hike and times himself, we're all competitive. We don't want to lose. So it's always just making sure that you better your previous time. I think that's just kind of what, you know, elite CrossFitters and those mountain tough guys do as well. You know, they never let themselves get out of shape.
O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater.
We've all seen plenty of gadgets and fads come and go, but here's one product that stood the test of time: Seafoam Motor Treatment. Lots of hunters and anglers know that Seafoam helps engines run better and last longer. It's really simple. When you pour it in your gas tank, Seafoam cleans harmful fuel deposits that cause engine problems. I'm talking common stuff like hard starts, rough engine performance, or lost fuel economy. Seafoam is an easy way to prevent or overcome these problems. Just pour a can in your gas tank and let it clean your fuel system. You probably know someone who has used a can of Seafoam to get their truck or boat going again. People everywhere rely on Seafoam to keep their trucks, boats, and small engines running the way that they should the entire season. Help your engine run better and last longer. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
I want to roll back to that New Mexico hunt we were on last year. And one of the things I noticed is, a lot of times we use hunting partners. You know, there might be a time where a hunting partner gets down, the other one picks them up. Versus if you go out there with a hunting partner that, you know, when you're down, takes you down with him, and then you're out. One thing, you know, hunting with you, we struggled. Like you showed up on day two. We got our butts kicked for what, 7 days until we had something work out right on the morning of the eighth day. And then, you know, it didn't, or the night of the eighth day. But one thing you never mentioned, like, we weren't going to get it done. Like, I feel every morning we woke up, I think me and you both honestly thought that that was when it was going to happen. And
this
then
is
when
the day,
it, and
right?
when it didn't this happen the in the morning, like in the middle of the day, like, we just have to sit here by our time and we're going to kill them right before dark. Well, dang, it didn't happen. And it was, you know, well, it doesn't have to be a partner. I want to like talk about that mindset that even though we have been getting our butts kicked day in and day out, we honestly felt that every new scenario, every new morning, every new day was a time that it was going to happen. And I can't stress enough that I approach every hunting day. And if I don't feel that way, then I should probably we talk about hunt plans all the time. You should refigure out your hunt plan, because your hunt plan should somewhere have you killing an animal that first morning in or that first night in. And I don't go out there expecting anything less. Yeah, we've been there enough times that it's probably not going to happen on the first day. We got to do some exploring. But during that exploring, like, I'm going out there with the intent, like, you know, your gun's loaded, you're ready to shoot your bow. It's going to happen on that first night or morning. And that was one thing I noticed hunting with you. Like, we never, neither of us ever thought it just wasn't going to happen. It was just becoming more difficult than we wanted. The bulls weren't cooperating, but we were in them every day. We were doing, you know, what we thought.
And I think that's an important thing to say to new elk hunters, right? I think if you've done enough elk hunting, had some success over an extended amount of time, you realize it can happen at any point. Like, it can be the slowest of weeks and the slowest of days, and then 5 minutes later, you got a bull down at your feet. You know, it's just, elk especially, it happens so fast. And I think when you've seen that play out, whether it's with yourself or with others, you just know, like, man, no reason to get down. It could happen today. It could happen in the morning. It could happen the very last minute of the last day, like it did with us. I know going into these hunts, we carve out a lot of 10-day hunts. That's always my goal, is if I can carve out 10 days, I know that's not reasonable for a lot of folks. But I always expect to find something on that 10th day. Like, the 10th day has been so good. 9th or 10th day, it's unbelievable how many trips have come down to the very, very end. And I can't explain why. Is it that you've just learned it? You finally figured it out at the very end. Or you put a little bit more push at the very end, which we had to do on our New Mexico hunt. We got to make this happen, whatever it takes. And we made it happen.
And that's on that 10th day, you know, I get bored occasionally and go flip through my iPhone and, you know, look at Apple Fit or whatever it is. And, oh, how come on the last day we hiked twice as high? You know, and if we would, and it's not that we didn't have the right mindset, because you're the type of guy that would just coax me into climbing a different mountain. We thought we were doing what we needed to be successful, because there were elk there, they were bedded, we were sitting on them. But that last day, we just, you know, we had a little bit of information from Dirk. We knew where we thought that bull would be, and we just came in from a completely different area, and we just, you know, motored up. And that's one thing. One other thing I want to mention is, you know, a lot of times it seems like on that last day, whether it's we either figured it out or as hunters, it's weird that we will do things more correctly or more with more caution or more effort on the last day. It's like,
don't screw it up on the last day.
Why don't we sometimes approach the day two stock like that? Why didn't we put that much effort in on day two? Was it we didn't have it figured out? Maybe we thought we were going to get an easier one. Like, if you put that effort in on every day, you may find more success. And that, you know, the last stock where you're taking your shoes off versus maybe, you know, days two or three stock, you didn't take your shoes off. And
It's interesting. I don't know why.
Just mindset where you pay more attention on that. But
there's always a little bit of frantic. Like, you're willing to do whatever. And I keep saying that, but you're willing to go where you haven't looked. You're willing to just do whatever and go as far as it takes down to the last minute. And we saw that play out. And I've seen that play out so many times. on that end day. And there's trips where it's like, you only have 5 days to go do this hunt.
Yep.
And it ends up happening on the fifth day.
Yeah.
You just give it a little extra, I think.
Yeah.
And I think experience, you know, that's where a lot of hunters can get down after, say, a miss or a blown stock or a blown call-in situation. And they're like, well, that's just going to be my only chance. I just might as well go home.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to get another crack like that. That was a gimme, and it got blown up. Well, you can't think like that. You have to expect that there's going to be another opportunity.
Yep, and that last day is a perfect example of it, because we went up there, we could hear the bulls being on off the backside, and then that one decided to come from a long ways across the canyon. Well, we called him all the way to us, remember?
Yep.
And then he busted us somehow. We reset, we heard him bugle.
He was so close.
He was within eyesight, and I was a little bit like, last night we maybe got an hour left, like what can we do? We kind of take a different way off the mountain. We were going to come down a different ridge than we walked up. And I think we either heard some cows or we busted some cows, and then a bull bugled right away, and we got right back on them.
Yep.
And so if you would have just like put your head down, decided like, you know what, it's all over, I'm going to hike out the same ridge versus us taking a different way, that wasn't the end of like our struggle either, because now we bumped these elk.
Mm-hmm.
He kept bugling, and we ran into other hunters.
It gave us one more opportunity before we head back to the vehicle.
Yep.
Like we took it down to the last minutes of daylight.
Yeah. And cool. That was one of those situations where we just decided me keeping him busy and not putting more, and then you sneaking in on him. It worked great, but as far as persistence and keeping, on track of what we accomplished, because it was just one of those wishbone ridges where we could have went left or we could have went right. And if we went right, we would have just like, hey, we're done. We could have just as easily walked out into Mexico without you killing a bull versus let's a little bit longer walk back the truck. Hey, this little flat ridge looks pretty good. Sure is, ran right into elk, and then we're ultimately able to kill that bull. But it was times like
it was classic. Like we just I feel like we kept our head in the game, and I fully expected. I think you probably heard me on that last day. Fully expected to get a bull on that day.
Yep.
As tough as it was, and even our busted morning that didn't quite work out like we thought it was going to, and now we're midday and it's
changing
slow
spots.
And it's like we're moving over here and we're going to hike up to that top and getting very little calling in. And yet I still felt like we got a shot, like we still got a chance here.
Yep.
And I think that's, we just kept pushing and pushing, and in the end came away with a filled tag. Yeah. So,
it was a good hunt. So I do want to talk a little bit where we're at. We're here at the Western Hunting Summit, which you and your wife and your team, a bunch of great experts come in, Joel Turner, Brian Barney, Mark
Jason
Livesay.
Phelps. Yeah. All the good ones.
You bring in a great group, and it's really, I think it's kind of, the ultimate, kind of show of what people think of you. You are here on a podcast, but you meet you in person, you're very quiet, don't talk a lot, but yet just kind of leading by example and putting, people want to come see what Ryan Lampers' Western Hunting Summit looks like. And so we're here, it's been a great week, but can you tell us a little bit about the Western Hunting Summit and what you hope to accomplish out of that? And I think you're in your second year, and it doesn't look like it's going to slow down at all moving forward.
Yeah, no, it's been great. And we're actually in our fourth year now. We've been doing it for 4 years. I think this is our 10th event this year, somewhere around there. And we've got two more after this one. So just a brief about it. It's a 4-day event. Me and my wife got this harebrained idea 4 years ago to put it on. I used to be heavy into those train to hunt events, and we had this great community surrounding us in train to hunt when we used to compete in those. And I love the group of people that we got to know. Some of my best friends came from that. Just like a hunting Spartan race, is what it is if you haven't heard of it. And we fell in love with the crowd, the community of hunters that really like to push themselves. And from that, we wanted to do something. Train to hunt kind of went away for a while. So we were like, man, we want to keep doing this thing. And so we thought, we'd get all these experts, the Phelps type guys, to come in and educate people. And so we got a great group of presenters. And in the beginning, we wanted to do mostly education for guys to cut the learning curve. For so many new hunters that want to get into this Western style hunting, we wanted to really put a place together where we could answer any and all questions for people that had them. Now, since it's evolved, we do a lot of education, obviously, but there's a lot of entertainment as well. You know, now we have these overnight hikes where we're able to take guys up and glass off mountains. And, you know, you and Cody Wilson, you know, we're heading up the mountain tonight and we're going to do some calling sessions up there and just, you know, really get guys like this live action. Like they're going to actually see what we do on the mountain. So we just try to make it a good time, entertaining, educational, great community of people. We'll make lifelong friends at this event as well. Surprisingly, we have a very large return rate that we never thought we were going to see when we first started doing this. But right here in Montana, we've got a huge ranch that we work off now where we have access to take guys out and really show them the nuts and bolts of Western hunting. And it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. In my opinion, you know, my first time here, we've had Cody here in the past representing Phelps and whatnot. I feel that you know, they can read an article that you could write or I could write. And they're not going to get out of it what they're getting here. You know, hands on. We're going to hike up the mountain, teach them, you know, maybe where they should glass first thing in the morning, where we think where we'd expect to find elk. You know, and that goes a lot farther than reading in a magazine article where we tell them they should glass or where we think they should glass. It's like we're going to see the elk, we're going to see the bear, the deer, and this is why we would sit here, and this is why we would look where we're going to look.
I love it. Yeah, and it is. It's like that one on one time. So we get to literally sit with these folks up on a mountain. Glass and critters. We're in a place where there's a lot of bears and deer and elk and have those conversations with them so they can bounce questions off of all of us. And that's what we really like to do. And from the surveys, that's what people really enjoy is having those conversations, even aside from the presentations, where we just get to sit down and go through any and all questions that they have. And that's the goal. And when they get here, we tell them to make sure every question you have, we want to answer it. Find one of these guys that are here to do just that and get them aside from the presents and talk to them, pick their brains, learn how to elk call better, learn how to hunt elk better or mule deer or whatever it is they're here for. And that's what it's evolved into. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot more valuable information when you get to talk to a none of us like to be called experts, but when you get to talk to Jason Phelps one-on-one
or Ryan Lampers
and talk about what exactly he would do in this situation looking at that bull on that ridge, I feel like the information is a little more valuable.
Because I can give him real life feedback. I can take my thousands and thousands of times I made the wrong decision and the few times I made the right decision and put it into like my answer. And, you know, and then we'll explain to him like, you know, the wind, what's it doing, time of day, you know, why we wouldn't maybe make this approach or, you know, why I would maybe do this, but then why Ryan would take the cautious and he's going to hike 1,000 feet up and over this ridge and drop it, you know, and we can give different scenarios and where we feel like if you did that, you know, the fail point is going to be here, you know, and it's a really good camp and I'm excited to be here. And, I feel that you're able to see these people and their questions that they're coming up with, get their own personal question. You know, they might be embarrassed to ask any other way. Like they're just coming up and asking and it's a great event. So,
yeah. And again, I am an introvert, so I hate doing these presentations. I'm not the guy that stands up there and gives all this great information, but I don't mind aside, you know, conversations where there's two or three guys, I can handle that. Yep. It's standing in front of a group of 20, 30 folks that, really gets me.
All right, well, we're going to close this up. I don't want to take too much time at your own event here. If you could give the listeners a single tip to be more successful in the elk woods, what would it be?
Find a mentor. Find somebody that's done it and has more experience than you do. And either saddle up to them if they're willing to take you or try to get into some deep conversations about what they've learned from when they started to where they are now. And that's what's helped me. I've had great mentors in my life, people that took the time to share great information. It cut the learning curve. And it really helped me a lot.
I'm going to, and you might know the answer to this since you're not in this position, but you probably get people asking, as somebody that's looking for a mentor, like rather than just be the guy that randomly messages somebody out of the blue, you're most likely going to get a no. Like, do you have a good approach? Like, are there steps to becoming, you know, getting the hunt with, and you're probably going to hate me for this, like, hunting with Ryan Lampers. Like, what would be your steps? You're probably pretty full. Your plate's pretty full, and it's tough, but you can find other people. Like, what would be the steps so that you're not just, like, shotgunning emails to rent? You know, it's like, there's got to be a process of building.
Yeah, that's a tough question. I guess come to a Western Hunting Summit and talk to a guy like Phelps. There. I don't know. No, I think, you know, I see a lot of questions on social media, honestly. And I try to be as good with my time as possible and really try to answer those questions. Because I know there's a lot of people that are really struggling to find those mentors. But I feel like with social, as much as we like to say we hate it, it does offer opportunity to find people who are willing to talk to you. I know a lot of the guys that I invite here to present are very good with their time. They love answering questions, whether it's an event like this or through social. They'll take the time to give a realistic answer, not just a three-liner.
Yeah, that's a great tip. And I agree. You know, you had a great mentor. I kind of cut my teeth on learning this all my own, because back then there weren't a lot of people teaching how to call. Nobody I knew how to call elk. And I think, you know, spending, you know, a year in the elk woods with you or somebody that knew what they were doing would have greatly reduced that. But I wouldn't trade it for the world, because I got to learn all the wrong ways not to do the thing as
for
well.
Sure.
But yeah, finding a mentor I think is a great tip, because I mean, you're going to learn whatever that person's learned over the last 20, 30 years in 1 year, and then you're going to see how it's done. You're going to see an approach versus you out there randomly guessing, like, mm-hmm. is this when I'm supposed to do this? Or this magazine article said I should probably do this here.
Well, we grew up in an era where there weren't podcasts, right? And there is so much great information in these podcasts now. And so even without a mentor, you can really cut the curve by listening to these podcasts that are dedicated to tips and tactics and strategies and things like that. Geez, there's videos where you can learn a lot if you pay attention to what they're actually doing in there. I got a lot of people that show up to these events, and they've got a lot of their information from just that, podcasts, social media, and they're pretty sharp. They don't have the experience, but that'll come, but they have the gist on how to do it. And that's a great starting point. So maybe they don't get that that crusty old 70-year-old elk hunter mentor like I got. But these days we're blessed to have all this free information for folks that they can have really at their fingertips.
Yep. And then just going out and implementing it, which the mentor kind of shows you how to implement it versus, you know, reading it or hearing it, and then it's going out and putting it to use and making it work for you. So, well, I really appreciate having you, Ryan. We'll let you get back to the Western Hunting Summit, and we're about ready to hike our butts up 2,000 feet up a mountain, so this is going to be fun.
Yeah, we're taking off here in about 30 minutes, hiking up to the top, a couple thousand feet of vertical, camping, and then we're 3D shooting our way down tomorrow.
This is where this whole, like, get in shape, not in shape is going to come back to bite me, but we'll be fine. It's only 90 degrees now. No, it shouldn't be bad. It'll be good.
So, well, I appreciate you having me, Jason. Yeah,
thanks everybody for tuning in. Before I forget, where can people find out more? I know Hunt Harvest Health, Stealthy Hunter, let people know how to get a hold of you.
Yeah, so many ways, I guess. The Western Hunting Summit, we got a website there. But then, yeah, Stealthy Hunter on the old IG, and then Hunt Harvest Health, we got a website over there where my wife does a lot with food and health and all the things. And then we got our podcast as well. Same Hunt Harvest Health.
Perfect. Well, I appreciate having you, Ryan. Let's go get our bags packed and get ready to hike up the hill.
Excited.
All right. Thank you. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.